Hi, everyone. I'm Colby Horton.
And I'm Frank Yamada.
And we'd like to welcome you to another episode of Engaging in the Next, an original podcast from Association Briefings, where we talk about what's next for the association community when it comes to technology, MarCom strategy, people, membership, and money. So how's it going, Frank?
It's going well, but could be going even better if you remember this is our board episode.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about boards today, but what's with all the meats and cheeses?
Colby, there's nothing to be embarrassed about if you forgot to assemble a delicious charcuterie board like I did.
I think there was a misunderstanding, Frank.
You see, over here I have some prosciutto, some chorizo, over here some gorgonzola, a little bit of manchego, and then baby pickles.
Wow, you're fancy. And as tasty as this all looks... And by the way, I don't think those are universally called baby pickles. But our guest today is talking about a different kind of board that also brings a lot to the table.
Ooh, nice pun, Colby.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that, Frank. So switching topics here, I think we all know that association boards play a pivotal role in guiding their organizations toward success. But what sets apart the truly exceptional boards? It's really their ability to anticipate challenges and opportunities on the horizon. They steer their organizations through uncertain times with clarity and confidence, and they lead the board in a state where it can be successfully inherited by the next generation of board members. And so our guest today is an association industry rock star, intentionally performing on the association podcast circuit this year. Jeff DeCagna is executive advisor for Foresight First in Reston, Virginia. He's an association contrarian, foresight practitioner, governing designer, stakeholder successor and advocate, and stewardship catalyst. In his work, Jeff advises association and nonprofit boards on how they can set a higher standard of stewardship, governing, and foresight. Jeff is the 32nd recipient of ASAE's Academy of Leaders Award, the association's highest individual honor given to consultants or industry partners in recognition of their support of ASAE and the association community. Jeff, welcome to Engaging in the Next.
Thanks, Colby. Appreciate being able to come on and join you for a conversation.
Yeah, we're excited about this conversation. We know you're a busy guy. You've been touring on the association podcast circuit quite a bit lately. You've been doing a number of podcast interviews this year. Why is that?
Well, I appreciate you asking because actually this year is the 10-year milestone of the Board Studio Foresight, which is a concept that I first wrote about in 2014, Associations Now. And I'm using the occasion of this 10-year milestone to have conversations about it, which is why I've been doing a lot of these podcast conversations and happy to be chatting with you as well. Because I think it's a moment when we really need to be asking ourselves the question, you know, how are we preparing for the rest of this decade and looking toward the 2030s. I think today, I just did this math in my head, or actually using my phone the last couple of days because I was recently with a client. And so today is 1541 of the turbulent 20s. So we're now 1500 plus days into this decade. And I think we can all see the challenges that are in front of us. And it's really critical for association boards to be thinking about their duty of foresight. So this occasion, this milestone moment, is really an opportunity for me to remind people about the duty of foresight and to renew the invitation to make it a priority. It's not a celebration of the idea. It's not a celebration of me. It's really a critical moment of discussion and conversation and reflection for our community, and particularly for boards and CEOs to work together to say, how are we taking action to anticipate and adapt our organizations for the rest of this already very turbulent decade with more turbulence ahead, and also looking toward the 2030s. So this is a crucial moment for our community and really for our world, and we want to be ready for it.
We appreciate you stopping by our podcast as well. We've been involved in a couple of other podcasts that you've been a part of. We've heard you in person, and I think that from my standpoint, every time we hear you, we personally get additional information that we haven't heard before. So again, I'm excited to see where this conversation goes as well.
And Jeff, in some of those podcast conversations you've had, you've said that the duty of foresight remains a radical idea in 2024. Can you explain?
Yeah, so when I first coined the term in 2014, I thought it was a radical idea because we'd never really thought, or it had never been discussed, that boards had a duty to learn as much as possible with the future. That we knew and we know today that boards have duties of care, loyalty, and obedience, which are required of them, mandated by governments, by statute, by case law, by regulation. But in 2014, the argument that I was making and still making today that boards have this duty to be able to learn as much as possible with the future, to anticipate where things were going. And that was all predicated on the article that I wrote back then about BlackBerry and how BlackBerry's board and management had really failed to anticipate a world in which the company was not the dominant technology player that it was at the time. And of course, how did it become a dominant technology player over the course of the 90s and 2000s, and then all of a sudden lose that? It's because they had failed to the duty of foresight, and was my argument. I think in 2024, what makes the duty of foresight still a radical idea, like you could say it's been around for 10 years, you've just been writing about it and talking about it for 10 years. So why is it still a radical idea? And I think it's a radical idea because it's still challenging our orthodoxy about what boards do, how boards function, and what the purpose of boards is. And you just, when you think about the definition itself, the next version of the definition that I posted in 2022, taking into consideration everything that had happened during the pandemic and the follow-on consequences. So I revised the definition after 8+ years of a relatively stable definition to something different to take into consideration all these factors of the pandemic. That way of thinking about the duty of foresight, that it requires boards to stand up for their successors' futures and to do so through intentional learning, through short-term sacrifice, which means sacrifice today, not for a short duration, but long-term action. All of those are radical ideas for a group like a board, which often is not focused on those issues, not focused on as much on learning, not focused on making sacrifices in the short term, but in fact trying to maximize short-term advantage and not always taking a long-term perspective. Also, the duty of foresight remains a radical idea because it's something we're saying boards have to work together on this. It's not enough for some people to come to the table with a sense of what the future could hold for the organization. This has to be a collective responsibility upon which the board acts together on an ongoing basis every day. So it's foundational to the way we think about how boards will function or should function under the very unforgiving conditions that we find ourselves in 2024. And as I said before, looking toward the rest of this decade and beyond. So I like the idea that we look at the duty of foresight as a radical idea. I don't want it ever to become quote unquote best practice. For me, that's anathema. I want it to remain a next practice. I want it to remain a radical idea that challenges us, challenges our community, and challenges our boards to be thinking differently about why they're at the table and what they're trying to accomplish. And I'll continue to think about it that way and try to advance it in that way for as long as I'm doing this work.
I think for any association executive, executive director, anyone listening to this conversation should be really excited about taking this information back to their board and get started on this mindset of having this duty of foresight. And for this conversation, if we want to talk about how an association board can choose the duty of foresight, where do boards, where do CEOs begin?
Yeah, so I think there are probably two pathways, right? And one I would call the incidental pathway, and the other I would call the intentional pathway, right? And we'll talk about each of those, I think, in our conversation. But let me say this, that I think for each pathway that a board would choose working with a CEO and staff partners and other contributors to this work, I think the beginning point really should be really two conversations. One conversation is an explicit exploration of the emotional aspects of having future-oriented conversations. I don't think that we can in any way underestimate the impact of having real future conversations at the board table, because I've been at board tables and been in lots of these conversations over many years, even predating the work I've done on the duty of foresight, where you can see in people's eyes the fear when they start grappling with the challenges of what we're talking about here. And those challenges have only gotten more intense. So we're not looking at less upheaval going forward. We're looking at more. We're not looking at fewer tough choices. We're looking at more. And so I can understand that people are fearful. And I've got concerns too, right? We've all got concerns about what the future is going to look like. So we have got to grapple with that. We cannot have a serious discussion about issues related to the future, in my view, without being willing to grapple with the emotional impact that has on everyone in the room, board, staff partners, other contributors. Everyone's got to have the ability to talk about that openly and get it out on the table so that we all know that it's there and that we all know that we're sharing in this responsibility. We're sharing in the vulnerability that goes along with these conversations. You just cannot talk about this and not be affected by what's going on. So we should talk about that openly. That's one. And then two, I think that every organization, even somewhat independent of this, but certainly central to any discussion around foresight or around the board study of foresight, every organization's got to be able to grapple with their orthodox beliefs, those deep-seated assumptions we make about how the world works, because those beliefs are grounded in where our organizations have been over the past many decades, and in some cases, a century or more, depending on the age of the association. Those belief systems represent the noise of the past, right? That's the noise of where we have been, what we have done. These are often invisible beliefs that have a tremendous impact on decision-making in our organizations. They're tied into issues of affect, of emotion that I was talking about a moment ago. And I think that that's part of the issue that we have to grapple with, is how do we ensure that our conversations related to the future and the pursuit of really building in that duty of foresight are not held back, not held captive to that belief system of the past. So I think regardless of which pathway an organization might, maybe they don't intentionally choose, whether which pathway they start on is the incidental pathway that takes them down the work of foresight a little bit and ultimately might get them to the duty of foresight, or they start out believing that they need to embrace the duty of foresight from the very beginning and then work their way into the rest of the work from there. Those two conversations, in my view, are critical. And we want to make sure that we're not missing out on them and keeping the focus there so that whatever happens next, they'll be able to have a meaningful and productive exploration of future issues. One other thing I would say about it is these may seem conversations that boards don't need to have. It's easier, for example, if you're going to pursue the incidental pathway, which I can talk about very briefly, is it's more like we're going to bring a foresight to bear on our strategic planning or on our strategy conversation. We're going to integrate foresight into that work in some fashion. And I regard that as somewhat more incidental because it doesn't necessarily produce the long-term impact that we'd be looking for on our organizations. It can certainly facilitate good conversations. It might even slightly improve the strategy conversation on some level, but ultimately it's not going to have that really transformative impact on the way the board thinks about its work, the way that the conversations the board has are future focused and oriented toward the long term. And so if an organization is just thinking about that, just thinking about, okay, let's introduce some foresight into our strategy work, which is frankly the way that I hear most of our organizations talking about it, and that's the way I've been talking about it for a very long time, then conversations about board vulnerability, board, staff, partner, and other contributors, their vulnerability, their sort of emotional impact of the foresight conversation, conversations around orthodoxy, may seem somewhat superfluous because they're just thinking about really how do you infuse this, perhaps, or introduce it into the conversation around something else like strategy. And I still think that even in that situation, that's not my preferred approach. That's not what I would recommend. But even if you're going to do it that way, then I think you still need to have that opening conversation because if nothing else, the discussion around the emotional impact of foresight conversations and the conversation on orthodoxy is going to open people up more to learning with the future and to really using the work of foresight and all the things that go along with it, whether you're doing environmental scanning or whether you're building scenarios, you're going to get more benefit out of it. You're going to free up people to be more exploratory, to be more anticipatory, to be more adaptive, if you can get some stuff out of the way up front. But again, for some organizations, they may not see that as important. I think if you're choosing the intentional pathway, it is crucial to have those conversations because everything that follows on with that is going to build on your ability to have that kind of honesty, that kind of shared sense of understanding, and that shared sense that you are all working together to leave the organization better than how you found it. So I think that those conversations are an essential starting point, regardless of which pathway an organization is going to go down.
Okay, so we're talking about these different pathways that your board can travel choosing this duty of foresight. So when considering which pathway to go, what questions should boards and CEOs keep in mind?
Yeah. So I think a few things to think about there. And one of the things I've been talking a lot about recently in conversations on podcasts and in my sessions is I've been talking about a framework that was developed by a futurist by the name of Jaime Cash back in 2018. And the framework is called the BANI framework. It's B-A-N-I. And I'll talk about the words in just a second. But as I said, it predates the pandemic, but it's exactly the right framework in my view for where we are in 2024 and looking ahead. It is intended to be a substitute for a more known framework that has started in the military in the 1990s and has proliferated, you know, sort of spread around to different sectors called VUCA, with which a lot of people are familiar, V-U-C-A, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And that framework has been something that's been widely used to try to make sense of the environment in which we've been operating. Now, VUCA is perfectly fine, and it does not mean that we don't have volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity if we don't use it. In point of fact, part of why I think it's less useful, and I think why Jaime Cash feels it's less useful, is because volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity are everywhere right now. Like, they're baked in to where we are. So it doesn't really help us learn anything more about the world in which we're operating. And so the BANI framework that Cascio developed, I think, is really where the question should come from. So the words of that framework are brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible. And the point of those four words, or those four terms, is to recognize that the environment in which we're in is reflected by being more brittle, characterized by greater anxiety. And that gets to what I was talking about, the emotional impact of foresight conversations. Unlinear and more incomprehensible, given the dynamics of technology and social issues and the economy and all the various factors we look at in this. So for association boards and CEOs, in terms of choosing a pathway, I would ask them to consider the following questions related to this framework. First of all, as you look at your industry or profession, where do you see brittleness in your industry or profession? Do you see systems within the boundaries of your profession as you currently define it, or your industry, as your field as you currently define it? Do you see brittleness within those systems, within your own organization, or in working with other organizations, or working more broadly in the space? Where is the brittleness? Or how do you see the brittleness of societal systems like the food system or the environment or the political system, the educational system, and all the various systems upon which we rely in our world? How do you see the brittleness there? If you see a high level of brittleness, and I believe across most fields that is the case, then you'll want to really think about, is an incidental approach going to serve us, or are we better with an intentional approach? Secondly, are you experiencing a high level of anxiety about what the future could look like for your industry or profession? There are a number of fields right now that are questioning what the long-term trajectory of their fields is likely to be. Will there be a field, given whatever it is, in 20 years? Will it still exist, or will it go away because it'll be automated, or because people simply won't choose to do it anymore? There'll be alternatives that people will pursue, and it'll eventually just wither away. Whatever the conditions are that might create anxiety around the current state or the future prospects of your industry or profession, you'll want to ask yourself, if we're seeing that, if we're feeling that anxiety, if we're seeing consolidation in our industry or profession, if we're seeing more convergence, if we're seeing insufficient people entering our space, then I think the intentional choice to pursue the duty of foresight is a better option under those conditions. Similarly, if we're seeing, to get to nonlinear, if we're seeing a world in which, you know, well, things we've been doing for years don't seem to be producing the right outputs. If we were doing A for years and we're no longer getting B and then getting C, but instead we're doing A and instead we're getting more like D and then J, we're getting things that don't really follow in the way that we're accustomed to, the way we've seen them unfold over many decades, then I think you'll want to be thinking about, okay, how do we adjust ourselves to adapt to that situation? Artificial intelligence is a good example of a, you know, set of technologies that is having nonlinear impact in the way we think about the future of work, on productivity in the present tense and the long-term impact of how people are going to contribute in their professional context or in any context. If you're expecting more linearity to occur in your space over these next 120 months and beyond, let's say, then I think maybe the incidental pathway is okay. But in my view, I think the intentional pathway would be the better choice. And then finally, incomprehensibility. More and more, we're seeing how technologies, particularly, again, AI is a good example, are introducing a level of, I don't really get how this works. And we're talking about technologies now that are being developed by companies, a small number of companies, where the most important people in those companies can't really explain to you how exactly they produce their predictions, right? AI is one of those, I like to use the term opaque containers, within which a lot of stuff happens and then outputs, you put in inputs, and then things happen in the opaque container, and then things come out of it, and you're not exactly sure how it got there, and not even the people who are most in the know can really tell you how it got to that idea, how it got to that output. So that level of incomprehensibility in technology, or the incomprehensibility of the impact of so many critical issues all happening at once, we're facing a lot of challenges. And so the issue is, for a board or CEO, do you see more of that happening in your space going forward or less? And I think an honest appraisal for most organizations is that we're going to see more, not less. So asking all of these questions within the BANI framework of what you can anticipate reasonably in these next 60, 84, 120 months, different time horizons, I think would really be helpful in terms of saying, okay, let's go down this pathway where we can do things with a more incidental approach. We find our way to the duty of foresight. I would really argue that for most organizations, the vast majority, that choosing the intentional pathway is going to serve you, serve your board, serve your association, and serve your space, whatever it is, your industry or profession, better if you do that starting today rather than waiting another 24 or 36 months to find your way there. So I think those would be some of the things that I would encourage boards and CEOs to talk about and to really explore together.
As we come to the end of our conversation, what advice would you like to offer association boards and CEOs with respect to the duty of foresight?
So it's an important question. And I think the way that I would answer it is with another question, which is, what will our successors say about us? And it's a question I ask all the time of myself, and a question I ask of boards when I'm with them, a question I ask in my public sessions. And the reason why I think it's so important is because it's different from other conversations that we have about what impact we're going to have in our organization. Sometimes we talk about legacy. What do you want your legacy to be? And oftentimes that conversation leads us to developing a narrative, a story that we want others to repeat about us. And not surprisingly, we feature as the heroes in those narratives. And that's not that helpful for us in 2024. What's more helpful is for boards and CEOs to have a serious conversation about what it is they're going to do to help those who will follow them in the future. And not just the people who will come in the next few years, but the people who will follow them longer into the future, into the 2030s, people they'll never know personally. And the importance of really understanding, how are we going to leave our associations better than how we found them, for their benefit of those that we'll never know personally. And I think that as a matter of advice, that's a great question to be exploring, because I think that's really the way that boards can make a fully informed choice about how they can choose to pursue the duty of foresight. Is the incidental pathway sufficient if you're just doing something else with foresight that is more specific to a particular process that you regard as more important? Or are you going to invest yourselves as an organization, as a board, as a staff team, with other contributors involved as well, voluntary contributors and other inputs as well? Are you going to really work together to say, this is the most important set of conversations we're ever going to have? This is what's going to define our short-term possibilities and our long-term future, for better or for worse. We've got to explore these conversations today, because we're setting up something that we are telling our successors, both our short-term and our long-term successors, that we are thinking about what happens in the future. We are demonstrating through our actions, not just our words, that we care about what happens to those who will follow us in the way that we hope that those who preceded us cared about what happened to us when today was an unknown future. This day that we're having these conversations was once an unknown future for those who preceded us. We are now in that same space. So here we are in 2024 asking harder questions, different questions, important questions. And I think it all begins with what will our successors say about us? And are we going to demonstrate to them tangibly that we are here to make things better, leave things better for them than they are today? So I think that's a starting point. I think the duty of foresight is very much centered on that idea.
That's definitely a powerful call to action. You've given us a lot to think about today, Jeff. Thanks for the conversation.
My pleasure, Colby. Frank, I appreciate it.
Hey, before we let you go, we'd like to put you on the hot seat one last time for the final segment we like to call the Briefings Minute.
Okay.
We're going to fire up a series of questions just to learn a little bit more about you. So just give us the first answer that comes to mind. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. So we've talked a lot about boards today. What's your favorite board game?
My favorite board game, probably growing up, was Trivial Pursuit.
Well, I'm actually not surprised about that answer.
Jeff, you're closing in on visiting every NHL arena in North America. So far, which one has the best overall experience?
Let me be clear that I'm a New York Rangers fan. So for me, Madison Square Garden is the end-all and be-all of everything, right? Just I grew up in the New York area, so New York is the center of the universe. So setting aside MSG, the arena that I visited on this long-standing quest that I've been pursuing was actually Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, which I visited there about a year ago, and it's one of the newer arenas where the Seattle Kraken play. And it's a great facility built into the ground. So it's not a high-rise arena. It's actually built that you go down to the ice. But it's actually very sustainable. There's green plants all over the facility that they use to keep it clean, to maintain, make it a sustainable facility. So it's a really great place, very comfortable to watch a game there. It was a great game that I happened to attend, the Kraken won. So yes, I highly recommend Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle. Of course, MSG is the very far above that is the place that any New York Rangers fan loves.
So if you were on a five-hour road trip and you could only listen to one song on repeat, which jam would that be?
If I had to listen for one thing for 5 hours, it would probably be Rosanna by Toto. That song, for some reason, has a very calming effect on me. So if I was driving for 5 hours, that would be a very not a calm experience. So that would probably keep me calm and focused.
Excellent. Finally, if you didn't work in the association world, what would your ideal dream job be?
My ideal dream job. There was a time in my life when I was much younger when I aspired to be president. And that is not a dream job by any stretch of the imagination. And I'll just leave it at that. Maybe for some people, but not for me. There was a time when I thought I might want to be a rock and roll drummer, but I don't play the drums. So that was more like truly a dream, not a legitimate aspiration. So I suppose that if I wasn't doing this, I probably would have been a lawyer. And again, not necessarily a dream job, but it's probably what I would have done. That was a pathway that I was looking at one time in my life before I veered off and went in a different direction. So I guess in some ways you could say I'm doing my dream job in a sense, like I'm doing the job that I feel like I'm best suited to do. And I'm excited to be doing it and excited to be, you know, working with associations to help them with what they're facing.
That's great. And Jeff, that's the buzzer. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Frank and Colby. Appreciate it.
And thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of Engaging in the Next. Join us each month as we discuss trends that impact what's next in the association world. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And if you'd like more information about Association Briefings, be sure to visit us online at associationbriefings.com. We'll see you next time.